mostly unpaid. I'm an unpaid staff member. We have many like us. But a lot of people, important people, have been laid off. We don't have Max Schmid just left, having stayed late. We don't have an overnight operations person anymore. If the door to this room is locked, we go off the air until somebody, you know, with a key can unlock it. They'll have to come up here to City College, to CUNY. Well, you get the idea. We're at the point that we've been talking about for so many years. We're there now. So many times you've heard me say something like, now more than ever. And there's always a crisis. There's always been a crisis, but we're past the crisis. We're gone. We are now past hanging on a thread. We are in debt. We are heavily in debt. We have one debtor for $2 million. Now, that debtor is a fellow traveler of WBAI. That's Democracy Now. And, you know, we can probably come to an arrangement with them. But they need to know that we will continue to survive before they can, you know, come to any kind of agreement. Okay? But what we can't negotiate with is the Empire State Building, where our transmitters locate. That's $50,000 a month. Bang, bang, bang. No question about it. There's the rent for here at City College, which is somewhere in the neighborhood of $5,000 or $6,000 a month. We have a new location. Oh, I love this place. It's the third floor of 388 Atlantic Avenue, and we will occasionally be able to use the performance space there. We're going to be sharing it with the Brecht Forum, which is one of the really cool outfits. If ever you wanted to team up with somebody, the Brecht Forum would be a good place to cohabitate with. And on the roof, there's a roof. There's a garden roof. There's an apiary. Or as I like to say, putting the bees back into WBAI. So, dare I say it? Yes, now more than ever. Please become a BAI buddy. Please. I'm going to, by the way, be doing a show. We have a guest. Gordon Linsner will be here. We're going to start in about 3 minutes. And what we were told by the program director is basically one-third pitching and two-thirds programming. Boy, do I agree with that. And so we will be doing a show this week and next week, and so on and so forth. We don't want you to tune out. We want you to enjoy what it is that you are hearing. Ooh, since I started this yap, three people have pledged. Thank you. That's excellent. That's excellent. So please, when I spoke to the station manager tonight, Bertolt Reimers, I talked to him about 8:30, I think, because he asked me to come in a little early. He said, pitch the BAI, buddy. And you know what? I was going to do that, and darn it, I am going to do that. $10 a month. Call the telephone number, area code 516-620-3602. If we ever have another fundraising drive, it'll be a different phone number with BAI volunteers answering. Right now, it's a call center. This all sucks. Let's not hold back, okay? But my God, BAI does not suck. BAI deserves to live. And you, we deserve, for one last time, we deserve your help to foil all of the things that are against us at a time when the government is shut down, in the week that New York City Opera has closed for lack of being able to find its financing. There was something else that I read is, you know, in danger of closing this week, some other great arts institution. Did I say arts institution? Did you know that WBAI has the capability of being one of the best arts places in the world, especially if we move to 388 Atlantic Avenue with a stage? Get it? Area code 516-620-3602. Again, 516-620-3602. Call now. Make that pledge. $10 a month. $10 a month. Become a BAI buddy. And we have a premium that is actually designed to be mailed out on time. It's Pacifica on a Stick plus the best of WBAI. Area code 516-620-3602. Okay, it is about 1:30, and we're going to go back for a second time to Bill Murray, and then we're going to start Hour of the Wolf. Nope, that wasn't Bill Murray. This is a little weird how this works sometimes. Let's see if I double click. That's the key.
Where the hell are you? Let's get some phone calls. 555-2150. What about you people in labor? Come on. Every Friday night we've been sponsoring a wobbly hour. We've been having old weird wobbly guys who were with the IWW back in the 20s and stuff. Let's back us up. We're in the same boat. 555-2150. It's us against the world. Let's go. Let's beat the world tonight. Come on, sheet metal people. Where are you? Okay, St. Mark's for girls. I'll give a kiss to every girl from St. Mark's that calls, pledges some money. Come on. You're some good-looking chicks. You got some handles over there. You mothers, you young mothers that are still up. The baby's crying. We're the only station that's got a radio daycare center, you know? We got a girl that comes in here and, you know, keeps the kids in their place. Shut up. Sit down. That kind of stuff. And it works, because the kids listen to the radio and respect the radio. Now, why don't you show a little bit of respect? Give me a phone call at 555-2150. Call up! Give a couple of bucks. Do you want to hear radio again? You know, what if you woke up some morning and there was no radio? It sounds like the beginning of a short story, you know, but 1984 isn't that far away.
Here, honey, try this.
Looks like our regular orange-colored frozen substitute for artificial morning breakfast.
Well, Bill, that's not funny. That sick is taking over. I have to figure out how to bring that down. Ah, here we go. Four tabs open. There it is. There it is. Okay. Got to be careful. That album has explicit lyrics. Good morning. This is Hour of the Wolf, a weekly program of science fiction, fantasy, enchantment, and the imagination. I am Jim Freund. With me this morning, Gordon Linsner, talking about his work, some events he does, and yes, Edgar Allan Poe. Plus, become a BAI buddy. Thank you.
Hour of the Wolf movie review, air date October 3rd, 2013, cloudy with a chance of meatballs 2, and we are what we are. Take 1. I'm Dan Persons, movie reviewer for Hour of the Wolf. I want to talk about 2 films here, and the first we can dispatch with pretty quick. Here's what you need to know about Cloudy with a Chance of Meatballs 2. It is endlessly visually amusing. As with the first film, the animators have created a colorful, elaborate, and nicely cartoony world. The character designs are clever, the physics are nice and stretchy, and the world, which in this case is composed of an island jungle inhabited by living food items generated by a haywire food machine, is well-suited to 3D. This is one of the few films where it's really worthwhile paying the extra fee for the 3D experience. The plot is nothing you haven't seen before, and no big surprises unless you happen to think that friends shouldn't be loyal to each other, in which case prepare yourself for a shocking revelation. But there are enough good laughs, there are a lot of clever visual and verbal puns on the order of such hybrid creatures as flamingos and crocodiles. Bottom line, go for the scenery, the rest of it won't hurt you. And one other thing is that this film continues the recent trend of positioning supplementary characters as breakout marketing icons. In the case of Cloudy with a Chance of Meatballs 2, it's Pickles. Ambulatory, affable pickles that you're supposed to embrace as goofy and adorable in their own wacky way. So, if you're tracking this kind of stuff, make note now that the equation is pickles are minions are penguins. Yeah. The other film we're talking about here merits a bit more attention. We Are What We Are is an American remake of a rather unusual Mexican horror film. The focus is on a family of cannibals living in a small town. Not your common everyday cannibals. These guys consider the serving of long pig a special occasion rooted in family tradition. Much like Thanksgiving, only in this case, the turkey begs for its life. The problem for these guys is that for the occasion we're observing, things are really going wrong. Mom dies while gathering provisions, which is to say rope and duct tape, and that forces the father, played by Bill Sage, his 2 teenage daughters, played by Julia Garner and Amber Childers, and his son, played by Jack Gore, to improvise. On top of that, the local doctor, whose daughter disappeared a while ago, is beginning to get suspicious, and the daughters are beginning to realize the full implications of their lifestyle, and they don't like it one bit. The director of the remake, Jim Mickle, emphasizes a low-key moodiness interlaced with shock moments and takes his story in a radically different direction than the Mexican original. That film took a gritty, naturalistic approach to its style and achieved horror through the offhand way the family regarded this aspect of their lives. It was all expressed in that title, We Are What We Are. We're cannibals, and that's that. That these people were also our protagonists, the ones we're supposedly rooting for, is where the dread resided. Mickle subverts that by having the daughters grow in opposition to their father. That's not necessarily a wrong move, but it does mean that the horror that was located in forcing the audience to see the world through the family's eyes now has to be relocated into shock moments like the occasional clutching hand or a bit of gore. Of the 2 versions, this is the more conventional horror film, a little more subdued, granted, and with good performances, but still operating under a moral code that doesn't really challenge the audience's preconceptions. That lack isn't enough to derail the film, but it is compounded by an ending that betrays the characters as we've come to understand them, for the sake of one more shock and a probable setup for a sequel. But for all that the original Mexican version, directed by the way by Jorge Michel Grau, is the superior one, there is a lot to be said for Mickle's reimagining, once you discount the misstep of the ending. The low-key tone may drag for some people, but I appreciated the nuance, and it does somewhat compensate for the loss of the more radical outlook. The film's still unusual enough and skillful enough that I appreciated We Are What We Are for its own take on the material. In a world of cookie-cutter horror, it stands on its own, and that makes it worth the trip. I'm Dan Persons. Check out more about the worlds of fantastic film at Cinefantastique Online over at CFQ Online. com.
That's not .com, that's .com. As in, are you nervous? No, I'm calm. Speaking of nervous, this is WBAI in New York City, listener-sponsored non-commercial Pacifica Radio, for the time being, at 99.5 FM. No, we'll stay Pacifica Radio. That's not the issue. Anyway, but, okay, you know, it's, okay, so here's the deal. It's one-third pitch, two-thirds show. Let's do part of the two-thirds show. Well, we started with the review, this time two movies from Dan Persons of Ciné Fantastique. I remember when that was a glossy magazine. I really enjoyed it. Had, you know, lots of nice features. They don't do this so much on the web, about, you know, how the special effects were done and things like that. It was a really, really good magazine. And Dan was the editor at that time, and now he's doing it for the website, which I think is run by different people or something like that. But at least he's there, and he's doing Hour of the Wolf, and he's also doing reviews on the Chronic Rift podcast. People who used to do a Manhattan cable TV show who just, I think, for no other purpose other than to totally embarrass the people who were guests on their show in the 80s, have been putting these up, I think, on Vimeo as opposed to YouTube. I was on the show at least twice, maybe three times, and oh my God, is it embarrassing. My partner, she watches this, you know, and she like sees that one of these are available. She just gets the popcorn, and I run out of the house screaming. It's like my early radio shows. Oh my! We don't have a tape recorder here. I would so much love to play you some of my very first live radio show, because Fred Pohl was the guest, and he just passed away. At the age of 93, and there were two other people in there. One named Lester Del Rey, and actually Paul and Del Rey at that point were sort of a radio team. They were together on Long John Nibble's show, and some guy named Asimov. And really, as the whole object of the show, as an afternoon show, was how to keep Isaac controlled. And Fred Pohl did a brilliant job of it. And I was just like, you know, there to introduce the show and watch these two guys shepherd Isaac. Not Gene Shepherd. That's something Max Schmidt does. Good morning, Gordon.
Good morning, Jim.
I'm sorry. I'm just so hyper. It's been, we had a reading last night, which you attended.
Yeah.
Which Margot Adler hosted. By the way, she's going to be on our air several times during this month.
I understand, yeah.
If Andrew Phillips has anything to say about it. Yeah, Jimmy Bai, I want you to bring her in. You know, it's like, I can't be there then, was the last email. That was about 10 p.m. No, it was later than that. We were in the diner coming
here. It was about 11.
Yeah, it was about 11. Yeah, I'm sure he's awake and probably texting me right now. Oops, I better mute these phones. Anyway, so those who haven't, this is what, maybe your fifth time on this show through
that
the years?
Sounds about right, yeah.
Yeah. Something in that neighborhood. Okay, no, that's not Andrew Phillips, it's Andrew Porter. Every time Andy Porter sends me an email, I go, Andrew Phillips, oh! But actually, Andy Porter, his emails are really, really depressing. As in yesterday, Elliot Shorter died.
Yeah.
Now, there's no reason why listeners would know Elliot Shorter, although he was on Hour of the Wolf a couple of times. He was a fan, not a writer. He looked something like Roosevelt Greer.
Yeah. I remember I've met him several times at cons.
Yeah. And just one of the sweetest, nicest people, good friend. He's been very, very ill for at least 10 years and has been in a home for all those years, and he finally passed away either yesterday or the day before. I'm sorry, but I have to tell one quick story. Elliot really did look a little bit something like Roosevelt Greer, a large black man, but very gentle and all that. and a bunch of us were in a diner. We were traveling to some Midwestern convention, and we're in a diner on a road somewhere, and he's sitting there, and these people are like in another booth, and they're pointing at him. And finally, one of the people come up, you know, with a napkin and a pen, and say, "Would you please sign this for us, Mr. Greer?" And Elliot, you know, looks at all of us, and the rest of us were Jack Chalker and some other people that sadly are not with us anymore. And Chalker said, "Sign Elliot Shorter." And so he did. And they looked at it and said, "But it says Elliot Shorter on it." And Chalker said, "That's his real name."
That's a great story.
It really is. Yeah. It really is. So I had to share that as opposed to some depressing eulogy. For those who want to know more, Google up the name Elliot Shorter, one L in Elliot. And he was a good guy. Anyway, I'm sorry, Gordon.
For?
Well, this is time for you to be sharing with the listeners.
All right, then I will.
Yeah, do that.
Should I give background on myself?
Please.
It's been a while. I've been a writer and editor. I've got about 3 novels published, a couple dozen short stories, founded Space and Time magazine, got the monkey off my back a few years ago, but it's still going strong under Hildy Silverman.
Yeah. Yes, and she's, by the way, been doing a very nice job of it, I might say.
She's got slightly better business sense than I had.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I noticed that she has continued buying stories and poetry. Not that many places doing science fiction poetry. It's something that you were sort of in the vanguard of for a while. Right. And she's continued that tradition.
And she has kept up what I was doing, which is basically trying to find stories that nobody else wanted to publish because they didn't know how to do it. So she picks the cross-genre stuff. She picks the obscure stuff. She'll take stuff from new writers.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know.
And some established
writers. So 20 years from now, she'll be in a position where I am, where people come up, "You published my first story."
Yeah.
Oh, did I? Okay, great. Good for me.
Yeah. and from, you know, respected writers.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So, and respected or not, I've never had a bad read, you know? I've never gone there and thought, "Oh, that's really terrible."
Well, thank you. And you didn't see the first few mimeographed issues.
Actually, I think I did.
Oh.
So, you write mostly the kind of horror that I can stomach.
Yeah, I'm not much into, like, gore for gore's sake. I wanted to have a purpose. And, you know, I think, you know, people are more terrifying than monsters themselves. In fact, many of my stories, the monster is just there. And it's the people motivating it or using the monster to do something that the monster ordinarily would like, "I don't care."
Yeah. Oh, by the way, be careful. That table is a great percussion instrument.
All right.
You know, so you hit, give it a
just noticed that.
Yeah.
Oh, I like that reverb.
Isn't that cool?
I get reverb on that in my band.
Now, if you're a writer like Daniel Jose Older, you know, who's also a really good musician, yeah, you can really do, and he did do something with that, as a matter of fact, when he was here. So,
I'm afraid I'll break that clock if I keep doing it.
But you've also always been, as I consider myself, except that I'm not a writer, but a portal to other writers. You hold events, as I do. You have 3 this month, 1 musical, 2 literary.
Yes, I do, in fact. The literary ones are going to be at the place called the Brooklyn Winery, which is in Williamsburg.
Which I've actually always wanted to go to.
Well, here's your opportunity.
I plan on it, actually. I really do. Now, which is the one? There's like 3 major distillers or wineries or beer places now in Brooklyn, and every one of them puts out good product. One of them puts out, I mean, you gotta love something called, okay, I know we're non-commercial, but I've got to say, Dorothy Parker Gin. It's made in Brooklyn. There's a Brooklyn single malt about to come out. I read in the New York Times, the New Yorker, rather. One of these places is going to be putting out a single malt.
That I'll look forward to.
Yeah. And there's two gins at one place. There's the Brooklyn Brewery, which has actually been around for quite a while. And there's this winery, and they give tours.
They give tours on the weekends, but if you come to our reading, they'll give you a special tour in between the readers.
Yeah. Yeah. And so, you know, so you can go, hear some good horror in the month of October, and hoist a glass or bend an elbow.
So you bend an elbow for wine? Or
no, that's beer.
It's beer.
Beer, for some reason, beer is bending the elbow. It's an Irish Irish expression.
Right.
It's a, it's
the way you hold
it. I don't know. Yeah. I mean, there are certain places, most of them in Brooklyn, most of them catering to Irish, and you see people actually, like, hanging out outside, and their elbow is higher than the pint.
Right.
It's weird. They actually do that. They actually bend the elbow, and they keep it up in the air. It's very weird. Everybody looking at their radio can see what I'm talking about.
Right. I suspect it has something to do with the mix. If you're drinking wine, you're sipping it, you're getting the ambiance there. You're drinking beer. Sometimes the angle, just woke there up the go. Microphone, the angle at which you're drinking at, the way the hops and the various elements of the beer are mixing, probably works better if you're doing it more at a 90-degree angle than if you're just sipping it like a glass of wine.
Yeah, yeah.
I know when I'm drinking beer, I always try it.
Unless it's a table wine, you're supposed to get the scent.
Right.
There's the air, I believe, is the word, you know. And, I'm not a beer drinker. I have about 2 or 3 beers a year. Mm-hmm. And then they'd better be darned good. They must be draft. They should be local, and they should be something really good. Like this time of year, a pumpkin ale, which I know isn't a beer. It's an ale. A lager isn't a beer. You know, I don't go in for any of that stuff.
I don't get really specific in that
either. There are people. There are people.
They're welcome to do that. But,
no, they're not.
I know. If a place is selling craft beers, they're also selling ales and lagers and everything else.
Yeah. It's.
And there are more and more places where you can go and have a choice of 20 or 30 beers on tap, another because 40 or 50 in bottles.
Because they're microbreweries.
It's amazing.
They're local and they're really good.
People forget. 100 years ago, there were over 100 breweries in Brooklyn.
Oh, easily. Easily. You know, and then came Prohibition. And it's basically what killed it all off. In fact, there's one place, a bottler or distiller or whatever, called TN. No, is it? Yeah. It's TGE, I think. TNE. The new. Is it Experiment? It was what they called Prohibition. When they passed the law, newspapers called it like the Great Experiment or the New Experiment or something like that.
I think it was the Great Experiment.
It's TGE. So that's the name of this winery / brewery that this woman is running, pretty much single handed, and that's in Brooklyn. That's near Gowanus. As long as they don't use the water from Gowanus, I'm happy.
I'm not sure you classify that as water.
You walk on it for a distance and you can figure it out. And Lister is tired. Lister getting ready for his 3 a.m. show, which is 1 hour 6 minutes. But that shouldn't stop you from coming in. I left the door open. Anyway.
Oh, well.
Exactly when is that event?
The first of the two events we're holding there will be next Tuesday, this coming Tuesday on October 8th, from 7 to 9 p.m. It's the day after the anniversary of Edgar Allan Poe's death.
So given
the connection to Poe, given the fact that it's in a winery,
you're going to have some dry sherry.
I've got a nice...
cask.
Cask. A nice cast doing a cask of Amontillado.
Yeah.
Yes, I
put it... See, you do the L. And Locally does the L. Simon Locally, when he did the performance.
Yeah.
He did the L, Amontillado. And I thought everybody... Vincent Price would always say Amontillado. But... so I thought that was correct, but I looked it up, and Amontillado appears to be correct. Probably both are.
I guess it depends what country you're in.
I think it's a question of if you're in Portugal or Spain.
Right.
Different languages, but the same word, and they both make Amonte right. Blanco.
Right.
The Count of Amonte. No, that's a different thing altogether.
Anyway.
Are these, we can't name prices being non-commercial, but are these free events outside of?
There is no charge to attend. There is a one drink minimum.
Okay, very good. That ex- okay.
And why would you not want to have at least one drink in a Brooklyn winery where they make their own wine?
Because maybe you don't drink. But, you know, then get a,
well,
get a soda.
Get a soda, you know, club soda, ginger ale, iced tea.
Exactly. I mean,
something.
I have good friends who come with me to bars. Right. And they do not drink because they once did. So, right. You know, and they count the years and days and hours since they had their last one. Those people just, you know.
And the fact that they can go into a bar and resist it. I admire that.
Yeah, it's amazing. I have great admiration for such people. And I know at least two. So.
In any case, I've gotten a... fellow tour guide and professional actor named Matthew Baker.
He's a fellow tour guide.
Yes.
So you, like the aforementioned Simon Locally, well, Locally stopped guiding. He's now a former tour guide, I believe.
Recently, because I saw him a few months ago.
Oh,
I thought.
He's gone back, has he? It's possible. You have to earn a living.
Yeah. Or he might have just been walking down that street at that particular time.
But no, he was just doing buses.
Yeah, I know.
Oh, okay.
But I mean, he might have been, you know, I might have seen him when I thought he was going to go on a bus. He might have, I would have just been passing him because I'll usually just stay.
Oh, okay. Okay.
You mean usually, if I'm in Times Square, because I'm going somewhere, I don't go there for pleasure.
Right. I go there for theater, but
yeah.
Once a year when I can afford it.
Right, exactly. Well, I remember the Times Square Brewery. That was a nice place. Anyway, so Matthew Baker will be reading. Cask Amontillado for us.
Terry McGarry
will be there as well.
The lovely, the wonderful, when are you coming back on the show live, Terry McGarry?
Well, perhaps she doesn't want to drive in from Long Island.
Actually, she said she's quite willing.
Huh.
But I just as soon, I'm hoping for the move to 388 Atlantic, and, you know, she can do it there.
Yeah, from what I see, that's a great location. I know Atlantic Avenue.
The building itself is a lovely three-story building with a garden roof. It's all wheelchair accessible, and it's got a community. You know, somebody said, we're going to move BAI to Brooklyn. It's like, no! 388 Atlantic Avenue. Well, 7 blocks from the Barclays Center. Really?
Which means 6 blocks from Atlantic Terminal.
That's right. Yeah. I mean, even the LIRR goes there.
Right.
And then I saw the building. In fact, it was when Andrew came in, and he called up, and on Sunday afternoon, he said, hey, Jimmy, bye, come over here. You know, take a look. You're going to love this place. And he let me in, and he was right. I love that space. It has a community feel. It has a feel to a WBAI that I have not felt since the church, which we moved out of in 1978. You know, it's just got this really, we're a part of you kind of physical thing. And that will bleed over, even if nobody ever comes there. You will hear that on the air, aside from the fact there's no soundproofing. You'll hear the community spirit.
Whether you want to or not. But no, it's a lovely area. And just up and down Atlantic Avenue, fantastic restaurants, shops.
Oh, God, yes. Oh, all the falafel.
You're right between Carroll Gardens and Brooklyn Heights.
Yeah, there's a place right around the corner there that has cold brew iced coffee. Oh, yeah. I've had a lot of bad cold brew iced coffee. This place is good. I'm not going to name it.
Because then they'll use up all the iced coffee and won't get any.
That's exactly. Exactly.
Okay, getting back to the winery,
yeah.
If I may, for a moment.
Yeah, and then after that, I'm going to have to wine a little.
Okay. In addition to Matt and Terry, my partner in crime on this event, Andrea Drains, who also she self-published a couple books.
I think I've met her.
You have. I introduced you to her.
Okay, that's why I met her, because you introduced me.
And it's weird. There's been a couple of events, instances of tour guides I met while working as a tour guide and only found out afterwards, oh, you write.
Yeah.
As well.
That's
Leanna Heber's the other one.
Yeah. Yeah. And she's a really good writer and great performer. Good actress.
Absolutely.
But you see, that's the deal. Like in scratch a bartender, find an actor. And that's true of a lot of tour guides as well.
Well, we're not shy.
Exactly. You have to have that kind of outgoing personality, and you have to make a living in between auditions.
Exactly.
Or in the case of Simon Lokely, in between as I pleases.
Well, in any case, she'll be reading something of her own there as well.
And let me tell you, everybody, she is. She hasn't been on this show in a while.
Oh,
but
Terry. Yeah,
but she's a. Oh, you're talking about Andrea.
Yeah.
Okay.
But we could talk about Terry, too.
Well, we can talk about them all. But that's one of three. Let's name the second reading event first, and then go back to Saboteur Tiger.
Okay. Well, the second reading event will be much closer to Halloween on the 29th. And I've lined up Nick Kaufman.
Oh, good.
Because he's got a new book. Actually, he's got a book launch party at Word Bookstore in Brooklyn on Franklin Street, which is much harder to get to, but on Wednesday. And I'm hoping to have C.J. Henderson as a second reader. C.J. is having some difficulties. He's got leukemia, and he's undergoing chemo.
Oh, God.
And
I have too many friends undergoing chemo right now.
And since he's got, and I've been there myself, so I know it's not much fun.
Oh, have you? I didn't know that.
I don't know, I'd like a week of full-blast chemo, and then it was like a year of self-injecting interferon.
Right, okay. But
so I had it pretty easy.
But you're a survivor.
I'm a survivor.
That's Rick Bowes, twice.
Wow.
He had two kinds of cancer. and he survived both well.
Yeah, he looks pretty. He Not looks quite. Really good.
Oh, yeah, he does. I mean, the last one was like, 15 years ago.
I think mine was about 20, but that doesn't matter. The point is,
it matters because it's good news.
I'm hoping CJ will make it. I mean, I think the prognosis is good. His big problem is money, because he is self-employed. He's a writer. He had a table at Nikon this year. He had like 50 books on the table that he'd written.
Yeah.
And he just churns them out.
Yeah.
So I'd really like to have him show up and, sell some books and get some money. Because, he's a nice guy.
Yeah.
He really is.
Okay. Yeah. And that's also at the same...
That'll be at the winery as well.
Okay.
Which is extremely easy to get to.
And tell people where it is again and how
it's
to get to it.
Williamsburg in Brooklyn. It's the first stop on the L train. The Bedford Avenue stop.
Mm-hmm.
You get off there. You walk up one block, you make a right, and you're there. The address is 213 North 8th Street.
And at free admission.
Free admission. We have
wine.
A beautiful little side room overdoing it with a window, much like the window overlooking whatever that is in the other room there.
WHCR.
Yes. Well, in this case, it's overlooking the cask room. So it's a perfect background for the reading.
Oh, so you actually have casks.
Well, there's a big piles of casks in the back.
Yeah, casks are like, what I've been trying to figure out is, what is a hogshead? A hogshead is like 10 casks. It's monstrous. And they used to actually, coopers used to actually have to roll these things, probably flattening entire villages in the process. Now, I'll talk a bit about Saboteur Tiger.
Ah, the blues band.
Yes.
Yes, so we've got a show coming up on October the 13th, because Friday the 13th falls on a Sunday this month.
Right. Thank you, yeah. Walt Kelly, for those who are not familiar with Pogo.
And it's at the Greenwich Village Bistro, which is on Carmine Street, half a block from the West 4th Street station. And it'll be our Halloween show. So, of course, we'll be doing things like Monster Mash, Witch Queen of New Orleans, Werewolves of London. About two-thirds of our songs will be Halloween-oriented. And then we'll throw in a couple others just to keep you guessing.
Yeah. Yeah, somewhere I'm going to have to figure out in the various time slots I'm supposed to be in, where I'm going to be doing an All Hallows show, or given that it's a fundraising month, just what to, maybe I can get a special. That would be nice. In which case I'll talk to you, about just, see if maybe they'll give me an evening to do Halloween and pitching.
That would be fun.
Yeah, I think so. And, right. Do the old, imagine a world without us. Yeah, which is all too close.
Right. That's another place where it's just no admission charge. Just walk right in, get something to drink. They have good food and reasonably priced, usually between $10 and $15 for
entrees.
A decent meal. Yeah.
And where is that again?
It's on Carmine Street, just off 6th Avenue, between 6th Avenue and Bleecker.
Oh, okay.
They also carry 5 craft beers, which change every time they run out of a cask.
Okay. And which, and the name of the joint?
The Greenwich Village Bistro.
Okay, very good.
13 Carmine.
Okay, and we'll repeat those dates and events in about, less than an hour, because we go off the air at 3.
Yeah.
Now we should go back to the pitch.
Go for it.
I think. But I think what we'll do is start off, there are 5 parts to the Bill Murray pitching. And we've heard 2 of them, and I'm going to play, the other 3 are like, 30 seconds each.
Right.
So I'm going to, if I can cue them up properly with this software, I'm going to play all 3 at this point.
Sounds like a plan to me.
And then I'll take over.
Come on, goddammit. Excuse me, but this is ridiculous. We've been putting out, not put up. Put up or shut up. We're going off the air if you don't do it. I mean, you're only hurting yourself. All right, I'm sorry. Nobody's calling now because I blew up. Now, I'm sorry. I'll play a record or something. But please, somebody call 555-2150. I'm sorry for yelling. I apologize. Real torture, Listen to somebody pleading for money. I make a fool of myself begging for money when I got more going for me than a lot of you. And you won't give me $2, I got that much money. I'll match. All right, I'll match all the money pledged in the next hour. I'm getting some money when I'm 25. So if you really want to hurt me and torture me, call up right now and pledge $150, and I'll write out the check. And it won't hurt that bad because I got it. But it would hurt me enough so you get your money's worth. Ladies and gentlemen. Okay, we just made it to $9,000. We just got the phone call. All right, I'm going to play some music in a second. I want to tell you first about who it was, the guy who came through, the guy who always comes through. My father just came in from Florida. He called from the airport, and he pledged $50. All right, let's hear it.
Oh, hello there. I'm Newton Ames talking.
Yeah, I mean, that stuff is so, so horrifyingly accurate. this is when Bill Murray, this is in the early National Lampoon days. I think he had already been on SNL, on Saturday Night Live at that point. But he was very much a part of the what was his name, Matty? The guy who owned National Lampoon and had a bit of a, quite a bit of an empire, and with a heavy metal magazine.
Yeah, I can't think of the name right now.
Matty something, or something yeah. Matty, at any rate. This is before Murray became, your real Chevy Chase, like, better than Chevy Chase, SNL movie star. Actually, Chase was pretty good. I just prefer Murray's movies. But he was obviously listening to us. And in fact, I met him at WBAI. He filmed a sequence at the church. When BAI was located at a church at 359 East 62nd Street, Eric Idle was making his movie about the Ruddles, that famous lost band.
Right.
And Bill Murray was in there. Paul Simon was in this. Everybody was in this at some point. And the Ruddles were basically like Harry Grainer and all these wonderful satirists, Christopher... Come on.
It's 2 o'clock in the morning. I can't remember these names. They're the same. I know exactly. I could see his face.
They're the same people that also became Spinal Tap.
Right.
Basically, and all that. And they were doing a bit where the Ruddles, the Mophead Ruddles, are landing at Idlewild Airport. And they are filming a bit with Bill Murray the K. Now, for those people who remember Murray the K... from, you know, the days of AM broadcasting. So he's, I'm flipping my wig, and he was doing all this stuff. And he used BAI Studios. There are only two people in there. Eric Idle, holding the camera and directing, and Bill Murray behind the Edit B console. And then in the corner was Paul Wonder and myself, and we're just, you know, like hunkering down, watching this thing being filmed. And I actually gave them a joke, which they actually use. And if you're listening very, very carefully in the background, you can hear it. I gave them the call letters for the radio station. WCWC Flushing. Now, only Anglophiles would get this joke. You know, right. Eric Idle thought it was funny, and Murray's going, what's that? WC, water closet. What's a water closet? It's a bathroom. Oh, WC, Flushing, yeah, okay, fine. You know, and he used it. But then when you watch the movie, you don't see him say it or anything. You see the Ruddles in a cab. And if you ignore the dialogue and ignore everything that's going on in the movie, you can just hear the call letters, the station break. And I wrote that for Bill Murray and Eric Idle, goddammit.
All right.
This is WBAI, New York City listener-sponsored non-commercial Pacifica Radio at 99.5 FM. Andrew Phillips, our program director, is calling this the Phoenix Membership Drive. I think it's an appropriate approach, the idea that WBAI is basically a pile of ashes, and that from those ashes, we got to build a beautiful void. The Pacifica Dove will rise again out of the ashes that have been WBAI for all these years. Because all of these, you know, we've had this philosophy that we go into a fundraising drive and then we don't make the money that we need to make. So how do you remedy that? Go back on the air and have another fundraising drive where you not only won't make more money, but you'll make every listener tune out. Now there's a successful philosophy.
Not.
So, we're doing it differently this time. Two-thirds show, one-third pitch. And aside from the Gary Null stuff that you were hearing Christine do earlier,
Andrew has gone California on us. 25, 30 years ago, when he was our program director, he was from Brooklyn. He was a bleeping New Yorker. Then he moved upstate to a very quiet place, which is probably a good thing for a former program director of WBAI to do. But then he I tried to get out, but they just keep pulling me back in. He became station manager of one of our California stations. And he went California on this. He expected to start a BAI staff meeting by saying, let's just all be nice and quiet for like 2 or 3 minutes. And after 1 minute, one person says, are we done yet? He said, well, it's bleeping New York. He said, forget it. But he knows New York. And
I think that we've already driven the California out of him. And we actually sort of know that based on some of the decisions that he has done. But he was a darned good program director then. The only person, by the way, ever to suspend me in all the years I've been on the air here. And yet, and well, he was right to do it, but in fact, I think he was lenient. Maybe I'll tell that story next break. But right now, so the idea is that while we have driven everybody away from this, hopefully, the fact that a lot of the programming has changed, some for, you know, I mean, we lost some good stuff. I mean, no news staff. That's about as drastic as you can get. We have wonderful staff with Andrea Sears and Jose Santiago and Sally and O'Brien and all these people. They're gone. They're just gone. We don't have a news department, period. The drive time shows, which is where Andrew's really focusing. He just cut all drive times. 5 hours in the morning, 5 hours in the evening, and we're bringing it in from California. Largely shows that he's created out in California, but also a money-saving move for Pacifica. Unfortunately, this has run roughshod over people like Hugh Hamilton, whose show I think was wonderful, but Hugh cannot donate his time. You know, now I am of a personal philosophy, because I go back to working here since 1967, that outside of the news department, people who are on the air should not be paid for doing their shows. But that's a philosophy that flew out the window some years back. And I'm sorry to lose the people, although I'm not sorry to regain that philosophy. Because it says something about who we are and why are you here at WBAI? You know, it's not to earn a living. In the case of Hugh Hamilton and Robert Knight and some of the other people, it's because they have something to say. They didn't come here to take a job.
Right.
On the other hand, they can't afford to basically be on the air 5 days a week, full time, and not make a living. You know, so, you know, their shows might not have gone away if it weren't for the fact that they got to pay their rent, just as WBAI has to pay its rent. And the looming rent over us is the Empire State Building. The fact that we broadcast out of the Empire State Building and to have this tiny little room, about the size of the tiny little room we're in now, which is, what would you say, about 12 by 12, maybe?
Not even that.
Not 12, even.
12 by 10?
12 by 10, something like that, yeah. That's over $50,000 a month. And that rate, by the way, is going up. And we're trying to pay, oh, and yes, we have to pay severance pay to all the people that have been laid off. That's $200,000 right there, okay? We owe $2 million to Democracy Now, and so on and so forth. And Pacifica is institutionally is in no better shape than WBAI. They used to haul us out, but at least two other of the five stations have had crises or issues, or dare I say, I won't say misspent money, but were in the negative column financially and has put a drain on the network. The network itself, the owners, the foundation that is us, something that a lot of BAI people forget, that we is them. And they may be the enemy, but when we, to quote Walt Kelly and Pogo again, we have met the enemy and it is us. And sometimes we don't have to look to Pacifica to be that. Sometimes we don't have to go further than a BAI staff meeting to meet the enemy. And so we're in critical shape. We're beyond, we're almost beyond hope. It's not even odds that we're going to survive through the beginning of next year. It's less than that. It's seriously less than that. And if Pacifica would have to sever one of its five arms, it would be us, because we're worth the most. We're the one with the commercial license at 99.5 FM, and who costs the most because we're in Empire State Building, whereas KPFT has a transmitter out in the prairie that they own. They don't have to pay for it. KPFA, I believe, owns the building they are in. Things like that. So we're in dire shape. So what are we asking for? Big donations, $2,000, $2,500. Bill Murray's father to give $50. Actually, I wouldn't turn that down, but no. No, we're looking for $10 a month. $10 a month. That's to become a sustaining, ongoing member, a BAI buddy. That's what we're looking for. That's what we want you to do. It's affordable. I am broke. I don't have a paying job. I can afford, I do a little freelance work, but even I could afford $10 a month. And do we have a premium? Yes, one we can actually fulfill, not like the ones, all the ones that you haven't gotten. What we have are these thumb drives, USB flash drives, that have Pacifica programs on them and or WBAI programs. The best of WBAI fund drive is $50. The 8-gigabyte 100-speaker collection, you see, they haven't broken it down. They're giving us the combined price. The combined price is $180. So I guess that means it's like, in theory, $130 for the Pacifica drive. Actually, I think it's like $150. Do they have anything? They've actually crossed it out there, haven't they?
They have.
Yeah, they have. But it's moot. We don't want that. We want what it says right there, the bargain. BAI buddy both. Notice the alliteration. Mm-hmm. BAI, and we're moving to a place with B's.
The bargain BAI buddy both.
The bargain BAI buddy both for the, no, it can't work in bargain. That would be redundant. But the bargain BAI buddy both for $10 a month. Yes, of course, it's 120 clams a year, but you'll get both of those premiums. And hey, if nothing else, you're getting a $25 8-gig drive,
right,
which actually are useful. The problem, you'd be left over room in that, because I think we're supplying mostly MP3s as opposed to WAV files. I think, I'm not sure. But one way or the other, the audio that you're going to get, the best of Pacifica, let's hope that this is not like a, oh, I remember when Pacifica used to exist and we can listen to it, especially if, well, BAI is no longer the people that it was. It's now been leased out, and we, you know, we can listen to the place that used to have Bob Fass, used to have Julius Lester, used to have Margot Adler, used to have Jim Freund, used to have Robert Knight. We won't be here unless something occurs. So what we're looking for, especially in the wee hours, is we're looking for $10 pledges. Become a BAI buddy. How do you do it? You makes a phone call. Area code 516-620-3602. 516-620-3602. We are promised that the next time we have to pitch, we won't be using that call center. Yeah, I was working the BAI table at the Atlantic Antic along with James Irsay this last Sunday. And the number of people, the goodwill of people who were coming by saying, oh, you're still on the air? I didn't know you were still on the air. I thought you were already dead. No, we're still on the air. This building behind us is where we plan to move. Here's James Irsay. You should know his name. Great classical music program. We won't mention this. I was shocked at how many people actually knew my voice. Quite a few. We even had somebody at the reading last night who came to meet me. And there's great will out there. But the people aren't listening anymore, and they're not even aware of the fact that the programming has changed so drastically and will be changing at the end of this fund drive even more drastically, but not in the primetime hours and hours like this and so on and so forth. So we have to be able to continue to exist for these changes to occur, to move to 388 Atlantic Avenue, to be there for you. But right now, we need you, on faith, to be there for us. Area code 620-360-3602. Oh, the reason I was mentioning that is how many people said, can you use volunteers? Yes, we need volunteers. To answer phones? No, we don't have a place where people can assemble and take phone calls. What's a phone call at the radio station? We don't have one. They couldn't believe that we don't have a phone number where you can call and speak to somebody running the station. This will change. By the next fundraising drive, if please let there be one, that would be next year, like January or so, we'll have volunteers, we'll have people, we'll be in a community place. You can come in and meet us. We'll be there for you, but we need you now to be there for us. Area code 516-620-3602. 516-620-3602. We're asking for pledges of $10 a month. Become a BAI buddy. Get that premium. What that does is it tells our owners that there are people who are willing to be on going donors to the station, that there is a future, that we can be self-sustaining, that we can continue to be a relevant part of New York City, to be a relevant part of Pacifica Radio, and that Pacifica Radio needs us. Make that pledge. 516-620-3602. Yeah. I'm pouring out all this energy at 2:27 in the morning, but you know what? I happen to know that there are people overseas. They use things like Skype. They are listening right now. They're on the internet. You're listening in California, where it's not even midnight. It's yesterday. Right now, you're listening to me yesterday. Right now. And you can be pledging. Anybody from Hawaii? I've had guests on in the last few months from Hawaii. Well, one anyway, Kate Elliott. But these people could be listening right now. In fact, I know that you're listening right now because I get emails from you. So you could get on a internet-type phone call service like Google Voice, like Skype. I think there are a couple of others. And you can call that number and make a pledge. It's the middle of the day in Australia and New Zealand. I've gotten phone calls from those places. 516-620-3602. 516-620-3602. I get emails and texts and phone calls semi-regularly from a fellow out in Bulgaria. But it's relatively early morning there. You know, it's not like it's middle of the day there. And I met somebody last month from Romania who's actually a WBAI listener. At a computer press event. There's a whole bunch of people from a company, an antivirus company that's actually based in Romania. I had no idea. Oh, their plum brandy was fabulous. And they... and one of those people was actually quite familiar with different Pacifica stations. They pick and choose from the Pacifica stations. So I know that some of you people from overseas are listening right now, or other time zones are listening right now. Let me put a call out to you. You know, we used to do it, okay, let's get people in Jersey. I know it's a long-distance call, but call from Jersey, you know, call from Queens. Let's just get people from, you know, Bed-Stuy to call or whatever. You just go neighborhood by neighborhood. I'm calling out countries now. I'm calling out continents. I'm calling out for people who are listening right now in Australia, in Europe, in Asia. I've never gotten a call from South America, but why not? Let's get those people calling. Let's get you. Become a BAI buddy and keep this kind of radio, this eclectic mix that is going to become more relevant than ever it has been, if only it can survive. 516-620-3602. So you see, it's not the middle of the night. It's the middle of the bleeping day for you. That's why I can't curse, because people in other... There's no safe harbor. It's like in Gremlins. Don't feed them after midnight. Well, it's got to be midnight somewhere. Somewhere in the world, right? Well, we all know that old gag.
Exactly.
Yeah, 516-620-3602. Okay, it's 2:30, and that's it for this pitch. Let me turn around, though, and let me take a look at this thingy here. And, that's almost an hour ago. The last pledge came in at 1:26. So, come on, you got to do it. You got to make that call. $10. 10 bleeping bucks. You know, we're doing the bargain BAI buddy, both bleeping bucks, okay? Then just do the complete alliteration thing there and give us, it's a shark fin, right? $10
it's,
a shark
it's
fin.
It's a glass of wine at the winery.
Well, yeah, but I'm trying to come up, I'm trying to keep the alliteration going.
Oh, something with a B.
Something with a B, okay.
Barracuda.
That's it. Yeah, no, it's a shark fin, I believe, right? Fin is 5.
Right.
100 is a yard. I've forgotten what 1,000 is, but I believe that...
1,000's a grand.
Oh, grand, but there's also the yard. Yard is $100.
Yeah.
But there's another thing for 1,000 in addition to the grand.
Yeah.
In the more Damon Runyon lexicon.
And the yard is a C note as well. Sawbuck.
A sawbuck. That's it. It's a sawbuck. Exactly. Let's get a few sawbucks, okay? Instead of Starbucks, don't go to Starbucks. Save up and give us a sawbuck a month. One last time. 516-620-3602. You want to do something, Bo? Do you have
I could do a Poe poem to keep up the alliteration.
Okay, absolutely. But don't make it a poor Poe poem.
Oh, no. It's like a po' boy po' poem.
Okay. For public.
Yeah.
Good for the public.
Soidly. Here we go. Lo, 'tis a gala night within the lonesome latter years. An angel throng, bewinged, bedight in veils and drowned in tears, sit in a theater to see a play of hopes and fears while the orchestra breathes fitfully the music of the spheres. Mimes in the form of God on high mutter and mumble low, and hither and thither fly. Mere puppets they, who come and go at bidding of vast formless things that shift the scenery to and fro, flapping from out their condor wings invisible woe. That motley drama, oh, be sure it shall not be forgot, with its phantom chased forevermore by a crowd that sees it not, through a circle that ever returneth into the same spot, and much of the madness, and more of sin, and horror, the soul of the plot. But see, amid the mimic rout, a crawling shape intrude, a blood-red thing that writhes from out the scenic solitude. It writhes with mortal pangs. The mind's become its food, and seraphs sob at vermin fangs in human gore imbued. Out of lights, out all, and over each quivering form the curtain, a funeral pall, comes down with the rush of a storm, while the angels, all pallid and wan, uprising, unveiling, affirm that the play is the tragedy, man, and its hero, the conqueror worm. Cheerful little piece.
Is that where the conqueror worm comes from?
Well, I don't know if it came from Poe or if he got it from somewhere else.
No, it's always been attributed to Poe, at least in, Vincent Price movies and the like.
Well, that's the poem is called The Conqueror Worm.
Oh, yeah, you see, now I didn't really realize that. So what can I say? Now that can't be what I think it is. Shall we take a musical version?
Certainly.
So we'll be back in, 2 minutes or so. In the meantime, let somebody else have their Poe say.
On poetry and song, one of the first songs I wrote was off setting a poem to music was Edgar Allan Poe. Certain poems are really songs in disguise. Poe wrote a poem called The Bells, based a lot on the sound of words, and I'll do what I can remember of what I wrote 6 years ago, the idea of melody. So. Hear the sledges with the bells, silver bells. What a tale of merriment their melody foretells. How they tinkle, tinkle, tinkle in the icy air of night. All the heavens seem to twinkle with a crystalline delight. Keeping time, time, time with a sort of runic rhyme. From the chant and ambulation that's so musically well. Balmy air of night, how they ring out their delight through the dances and the yells and the rapture that impels. How it dwells on the future, how it tells. Turn the swinging and the ringing of the molten golden bells. All the heavens seem to twinkle with a crystalline delight. Keeping time, time, time with a sort of runic rhyme. From the chant and ambulation that's so musically well. From the bell, 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 bell. From the jingling and the tinkling of the bell.
Gordon Linsner, our guest here this morning in Howard the Wolf, was remarking on what a joyful version of a song that's actually rather dark.
Oh, that sounded like you only did three verses, so it's the fifth verse of the poem that gets grim.
Yeah, it really does. I don't get to preview on the service that I'm using. I'm using a pay-for internet service to provide these songs, and I didn't notice that this was the live version. The studio version is a little bit more somber at the end, although it is, I wouldn't say, uncheerful. But one should also hear his version of The Highwayman. Oh, my God. Lorena McKinnitt. She does a version that is just so moody. It runs like 15 minutes long, and it's like, oh, as her breast shatters, you know. He goes riding. But Bud Oakes did a version of that. I did not realize that that's actually a 20th century poem. I thought that was like an old, old thing. But Alfred Noyes wrote it like in like 1915 or something like that. Yeah. For some reason, I thought it was like, you know, early 19th century or even earlier.
Well, it still had a 19th century sensibility about it. It was still calling back to, like, it sounds like something somebody would at least have written in the 1870s, 1880s, rather than 1915.
Yeah, for some reason, I always, you know, saw the redcoats in my head, you know, and I'm thinking, you know, post-Regency, Napoleonic era, you know, something like that. And Napoleonic era is so popular with so many different writers and things like that. Even Naomi Novik with her Napoleonic Dragons and Jonathan Strange and Mr. Norrell, which is supposed to be on the BBC fairly soon.
And I think I've seen that listed. I listen a lot to BBC 4 Extra on the computer.
Yeah.
And it'll keep the shows up for like a week.
Yeah, yeah, but this is television.
Ah.
This is like a 10-hour movie.
Okay, I thought they were doing a radio version as well.
Oh, I wasn't aware of that. Or maybe I misread the thing. But when I last had Susanna Clark on this show, which is quite a few years ago, she had... the BBC had optioned it for television, and she and I were talking about the casting. And this was so long ago that we thought Bob Hoskins, who has since retired from acting, would be right for Mr. Norrell. And if it wasn't for the fact that he's too overexposed and now too old, Johnny Depp for Jonathan Strange. When he was young, the Edward Scissorhands era, Johnny Depp would have been perfect.
Right. Well, the fact that doing it television does not preclude a radio thing.
No, it does not.
A lot of the stuff I've been listening to, Peter Wimsey mysteries that were done about the same time as the TV versions were.
Absolutely.
For radio.
And they're still doing Doctor Who radio.
Right.
So, although I consider that out of canon, you know. Please, the Time Wars, although I think Time Wars is what the upcoming episode on November 23rd is going to be all about. With the second eighth Doctor.
The eight and a half Doctor.
The eight and a half Doctor, Doctor 8.5.
Right.
John Hurt.
But I think Big Finish did just a brilliant job on keeping the classics alive.
Yes, they have. They have. And they've used Paul McGann.
Exactly.
Who, while that movie was awful, he was a great doctor.
He was brilliant, yeah.
He was, yeah, and he still is. He's still recording these things, yeah. And doing a fine job. But you have to listen. They're called Big Finish. They're actually a third party company, but then the BBC actually embraced them and sort of brought them into the fold. But before that, they were wild cards. They were coming up with their own storylines that were just not canon. And then Russell Davies, who was a big fan of their stuff, made their stuff canon. That's why Chris Eccleston became the last Doctor. They got that from the idea of what they were doing in the Big Finish.
There's one, it's a spoiler, but I guess that many people will be listening to it, or they've already heard it. There's a bunch of Sylvester McCoys. There's a brilliant one where it's set in Germany during World War II.
Mm-hmm.
His TARDIS has been stolen.
This is a Big Finish production.
Big Finish production. Okay. McCoy actually gets himself killed so he will regenerate as McGann.
Yeah.
And then the McGann doctor persuades the evil Nazi scientist woman to get him back get his TARDIS back, and he goes back in time to change things so that he'd never transformed into Paul McGann at that point. But became Sylvester McCoy is still alive.
Ah, okay. Okay, so that's...
I love that little...
Yeah, well, they have to do that whenever they have multiple doctors. I mean, we know that with David Tennant, he's off in another universe, along with Billy Piper, you know. So,
right.
So it's not going to be the Doctor David Tennant. It's going to be the cloned Doctor. He's half human, or totally human, in fact.
Yeah, he became totally human.
Yeah, I think so.
Right.
It gets a little confusing, but then there are rumors. There are rumors about other doctors turning up, including Peter Davison.
Davison is the strongest one. I'd really like to see McGann get some screen time.
Yeah, well, they should do it. If they're going to do the John Hurt thing, then it would really work with McGann. But I would love to see... I'd like to see a few surprises. I know we're not going to see Tom Baker because his physicality is not quite there.
Same thing with Colin Baker, I think.
Same thing with Colin Baker.
But McCoy.
But Sylvester McCoy doesn't look bad at all. And they have yet to show us, by the way, we've never seen a regeneration from either John Hurt or Paul McGann into Chris Eccleston. And we know that at the first episode, he's examining his body. He's like, oh, big right. ears and stuff like that. So that was a new doctor, but we never saw the transition. There was something else I was thinking about, and I totally forgot what it was. And you have a poem to read.
I have another short poem. A lot of people don't realize that Poe wasn't all, you know, grim and gloom and everything, although he certainly had good reason to be, considering that his mother died of tuberculosis, his foster mother, who he loved, died of tuberculosis, his child bride died of tuberculosis. No wonder he wrote Mask of the Red Death.
Yeah, right.
But he did write, you know, the balloon hoax and a lot of funny stuff. There's a short poem that nobody knows about. I didn't know about it until I was doing some research this afternoon, called Epigram for Wall Street. And it might be appropriate for fundraising as well.
Yeah, and appropriate for a WBAI that had to leave 120 Wall Street to become buried in the middle of what used to be Lewisohn Stadium at City College.
Ready? I'll tell you a plan for gaining wealth better than banking, trade, or leases. Take a banknote, fold it up, and you will find your money increases. This wonderful plan, without danger or loss, keeps your cash in your hand where nothing can trouble it, and every time that you fold it across, 'tis plain as the light of day that you double it.
I love the fact that, you know, his poems sound like poems.
Exactly. They're such fun to read because of that.
Yeah, they're meter. This is why people get Quoth the Raven, Nevermore. It's the meter that he just keeps it so fabulously rhythmic, and he does that. And so many poets lose that sense, especially modern poets. I don't just mean Ferlinghetti. I mean a lot of people that are just about meaning and not, you know, and forget the joy of poetry for the sake of poetry. And Poe, his poetry, no pun intended, it always had that thing, that so that Oakes was able to do the bells, that that little thing. They could all become songs or a somber or ditties. That would be a cute little ditty.
Yep. And his prose, too, just has a rhythm going along.
Yeah.
You know, it's just everything just rolls off the tongue.
Yeah. So easy.
Yeah. And you can hear a good example of that.
At
the Brooklyn Winery on January 8th, Tuesday.
You mean October.
October.
October 8th.
January 8th was when he was born.
Ah.
I set a little dramatic drum roll in the background.
Yes, exactly.
There.
Exactly. Yes. A little reverb.
Yeah.
A little Poe reverb.
Actually, I'm not sure about January 8th now, but it was January he was born and October that he perished, October 7th.
Yeah.
In a hospital bed in Baltimore. But we will be
having been recovered from the street, I believe.
Right. He was apparently they'd gotten drunk and were used in a voting scam.
Yeah.
But we only have 10 minutes left, so we can't get into much detail on that.
Less than that, because we have to play an outro.
Okay.
So why don't you give all the information again on what, where, and when?
Very quickly, on the October the 8th at the Brooklyn Winery, 213 North 8th Street, 7 to 9 p.m., free admission, one drink minimum. We will be reading classic contemporary ghost stories, including A Cask of Amontillado, which we still read while you can look out the window at a room full of wine casks. We will be repeating Brooklyn Winery event on the 29th. That'll be a Halloween, more Halloween-oriented event with Nicholas Kaufman and hopefully C.J. Henderson. The earlier one will include Terry McGarry and Matthew Baker. If you can't remember all this, you can easily Google Brooklyn Winery, and we should be on their calendar. In fact, I know we're on their calendar. The other event you were talking about, my Halloween show with my blues band.
Saboteur Attire.
Saboteur Attire. You can Google that. You'll find, we're on Facebook. We're on the Reverb Nation. We've got a page on that. And we will be...
What is the derivation of the name of that band? Saboteur Tiger.
Okay. At one point, it was just like with some of my other band friends, some of their musical friends before I formed a band, and they were just fooling around. And one of the bass player, I think, said, you should call us the Saboteurs. And somehow I conflated that with Sabertooth Tiger. Uh-huh. Just in the back of my head. Tiger just came out of nowhere.
Yeah.
So, Saboteur Tiger. It seemed
it's all about the meter again.
Yeah.
It really is.
And it works.
Yeah.
And we're mostly blues. We do a lot of, going to be doing a lot of horror-oriented songs this time around. Again, no charge, 13 Carmine Street. We'll be playing from about 7:30 till 10:30, maybe 11 if a lot of people are hanging out.
Yeah. Yeah.
And they have great food, some craft beers. It's a wine and beer bar. It's not, they don't have an alcohol license, but.
Yeah.
Wine and beer is fine.
Okay.
And hopefully we'll see you then. And they also have a website. You can check out their location. They're not too good at keeping their calendar up to date.
Nobody is.
But if you Google the band
number. Saboteur Tiger.
You'll find it on our Facebook page and on the Reverb Nation.
Yeah. Yeah, very good. Speaking of Facebook pages, there is an Hour of the Wolf Facebook page. And also a New York Review of Science Fiction Facebook page where people should now be posting photographs from last night's vampire event with Kate Locke and her guest reader, whose name I've forgotten, darn it. Kate had, she was really not in good physical shape.
It was Ashley something.
Ashley. No, that's it. It's Ashley.
Just Ashley.
Just Ashley. Yes, her name is Ashley. 6'4". Six foot four. I think she probably wins the award for tallest reader at a Nursef reading. I'm pretty sure of that. At least 3 inches taller than Rachel Pollack. And Margot Adler, of course, was our host, and Terrence Taylor. So it was fun. It was fun. We had a lot of fun last night. When I say last night, it was Tuesday night. But, it's Thursday morning, blah, 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 and all that. Our next official reading is November 5th. And what's official? Well, we haven't tied that down yet. We're going to have an unofficial reading with Moira Crone and Roger Kamenetz. And that will be in the last week of October. If we don't do that, they both live in Louisiana, then we're going to do it in January. So one or the other, because he comes to New York to lecture at Columbia a great deal. Hmm. And we're taking advantage of that. 3 minutes left before we put on the theme, before Lister comes in with Burn Baby Burn Clapper. For some reason, he's been standing at the door for an hour now, not coming in, just like, smiling his Lister smile. And I don't know, he's off in our studio audience, and he sits there just looking at Rick Bowes like this, and Rick loves it, And when Terrence was on and a few other people, he's our studio audience. In the meantime, let me remind you, gee, why are people calling in? I'm sure I'm not taking calls on the air this morning. Write me, jim@ourwolf.com. But you can pledge, theoretically you can pledge. You're probably calling to say they're not answering there. I don't know. One way to find out, you too can make a phone call at 516-620-3602 and become a BAI buddy for $10 a month. The future of Andrew Phillips writes, as we enter this Phoenix membership drive, I know there's much concern about the future of WBAI in Pacifica. And I'm not doing his accent right. It's Australian. Substantial debt, including obligation to pay severance to our laid-off workers, is $200,000. To pay off outstanding premiums, those of you who are supposed to get premiums and fulfill them, we have no idea what that amount is. It will be a lot. To meet ongoing transmitter costs at $50,000 a month, we have to continue to pay the whole seven people that we have left on staff and other standard and recurring expenses. If these things are not met immediately this month, do not expect to hear us on the air by the time Andrew's contract expires in February. Andrew said that he wanted transparency this fund drive. So transparency is what I'm giving people. It's a dirty window that we are looking through. So that's the transparency. This is not the imagine a world without. It's like we're about there, gang. We're about there. Please pledge. Please call 516-620-3602. On a less somber note, I will be back next week, probably from 1:30 to 3 a.m. I am allegedly going to be on the air next week, also on Tuesday and Thursday morning from 6 to 8 a.m. with Margo Adler. But that's Andrew talking. Margo hasn't told me she's willing to do it yet. And it's not going to be me without her, I can tell you that. Andrew wants Margo to be on the air, and she's quite willing. There's a lot of good people who are out there who, again, the goodwill that still exists for this radio station, I am so pleased to say it is there. But we have to get listeners back. And then those listeners have to become listener sponsors, or we're not going to be here. It's that simple. This may be our last fundraising drive ever. I wouldn't be surprised. I really wouldn't be surprised if at the end of this drive, we're going to get another broadcast where the interim executive director of Pacifica, Summer Reese, will come on the air and say, well, we're going to lease the frequency. This is something that has been discussed already. This is not a rumor. This is a possibility, a strong possibility. So, people, pledge during this drive. Make a straight donation if you want, or become a BAI, buddy. Gordon, I'm sorry that the show you were on here had to be so much about other things.
That's perfectly fine. You do what you have to do.
Yeah, but assuming we survive, well, I'll make it up to you by just having you on and having you do a show proper.
I appreciate that.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And thank you, by the way, I didn't mention, Gordon has been the person who's been covering for me because I'm on Wednesday nights. It's hard for me to record the KGB Fantastic Fiction series, and Gordon has been recording the majority of these and deserves a lot of thanks and credit for doing that.
You're welcome.
Okay, so thank you, people, for listening. Thank you if any of you've pledged. I certainly hope so. Send me an email. Join the Facebook group. Oh, just continue to be there and continue to support, or start to support, WBAI. Stay tuned. Burn, baby, burn, clapper with Lister coming your way on these airwaves momentarily.
And you're gonna have to keep on saying that. You're gonna have to say that I am a proletarian. I am
the
bitch.
Put on hold, the bowl, lose control. So they force obedience. Have you pledge allegiance to a piece of cloth? That's all the way I see it. Well, I'm going off berserk. Cause the system work to jerk. My people, the people, all around the pig lurk. Tell me I'm wrong, though. That's my writing. It's writing the Constitution. Yo, that's an illusion. Huh, suckers trying to change and rearrange. They say that I'm free, but they sure have a strange way of showing it. But I'm blowing the cover. The red, white, the blue, but the black for the brother. And I'm no lover of this flag like many others. Take the same turn like me. They yearn for the flag. Burn the material of the imperialist in a blazing inferno. Cause my hurt is internal. The American dream, a nightmare. I want the people to wake up to the lies the pigs make up. Imperialistic swans that I to bacon bits, call the fist, cause I ain't taking shit. I'm not a Nazi or a Cappy or a Crummy, but you want me in prison, cause I'm busy attacking the flag. I ragging and snagging and dragging and rip it to shreds, cause I'm too black, too strong, too red, too dread. And I'm dreaded, cause I make the pigs tremble when I burn a symbol. Yo, I'm quick and nimble like Jack, but I'm a black man attacking the flag. I keep my torch handy, I'm no Yankee Doodle Dandy, so just hand me a flag from the fastest and watch me burn that piece of to ashes. Cause the real meaning is what the masses must learn. That's why the red, white, and blue must burn, baby, burn.
So what?
like a match to the American flag and burn.
Can't hold my tongue, we just let it blow.